black nose appeared at the gap at the bottom, trying to snuffle them out. He whined loudly. Jack was afraid Toby the dog wouldn't give up while he knew they were under there.
If we crawl behind the tree,
Jack whispered to the Christmas pig,
we could sneak back out of the room while he thinks we're still under here and go to the kitchen door after all.
The Christmas pig nodded. Holding his belly to keep his beans quiet, he followed Jack towards the gap at the other end of the sofa, where the Christmas tree stood. Its fairy lights were the only light in the room. Jack was now so small that the parcels beneath the tree loomed up in the darkness, like higgledy-piggledy houses. Toby the dog was still snuffling and pawing at the other end of the sofa. Slowly and cautiously, Jack crawled out and began to climb the presents. One of them was wrapped in scarlet ribbon, which was wonderful because it gave somewhere for his bare feet to grip. But another, which was covered in blue paper patterned with silver snowflakes, tore a little as Jack grabbed it. A huge new box of Lego was inside, and Jack was sure that was from Dad. The twinkling lights above, which had seemed so tiny when he and Mum put them on the tree, now seemed huge and dazzled his eyes. Slowly, he climbed towards the top of the mound of presents until he reached the biggest, which was wrapped in shiny gold paper. He'd be able to walk straight across this, and then he'd be out from under the tree. But he slipped. The paper was so shiny, Jack's feet slid on it, and, unable to find anything to grab onto, he tumbled down a crevice, which was like a pitch-black ravine now that he was only 8 inches tall. He tried to get out again, but he'd fallen between gigantic presents with smoothly wrapped sides.
"Where are you?"
whispered the Christmas pig. But a second later, he too had slid down the slippery golden package and landed on top of Jack.
"Oh no!"
said Jack, as they heard Toby the dog scampering towards the tree.
"Why did you have to rattle?"
"Which way to the kitchen?"
cried the Christmas pig, as Toby the dog's growls grew ever louder.
"I don't know,"
said Jack desperately.
"I'm lost!"
Part 2. Mislaid. Chapter 15. Beneath the Tree. With the word lost, everything beneath Jack's feet vanished. He was falling, or rather, slowly sinking down through the place where the floor should have been. It was as though he was trapped in some thick substance he couldn't feel or see. The tree lights had disappeared. All was inky blackness.
"Christmas pig?"
Jack called in panic.
"I'm here,"
came the Christmas pig's voice out of the darkness.
"Don't worry, this is how you enter the land of the lost. It'll be light in a moment."
Sure enough, within a few seconds, Jack was able to see the Christmas pig again. Like Jack, he was floating downwards. Their surroundings became gradually lighter, until Jack realised they were both sinking through their own column of golden light. Above them were two round holes in a wooden ceiling that Jack thought must be the floor of the world they'd left. His world, where Mum lived, where everything he knew existed. Down, down, down they sank. And now Jack noticed that he and the Christmas pig were far from the only things sinking slowly through their columns of light. There were thousands upon thousands of them. Weightless, Jack was able to twist and turn, and in every direction he saw more sinking things. Nearest to Jack were a teaspoon, a shiny red Christmas bauble, a dog whistle, a pair of false teeth, a glove puppet, a shiny coin, a long string of tinsel, a camera, a screwdriver, a plane ticket, some sunglasses, a single sock, a teddy bear, and a roll of wrapping paper patterned with reindeer.
"You wouldn't think it was possible, would you?"
the wrapping paper called to Jack. One of the reindeer on her surface was talking and blinking.
"Third time she's lost me this evening. I've rolled under the radiator. She's panicking. Left the wrapping too late, as usual."
The roll of paper had barely uttered these words when she reversed direction and began travelling up instead of down, towards the hole in the ceiling. As she rose out of sight, the wrapping paper shouted,
"Yay, she's found me! Good luck! Hope you're back up top soon!"
Jack didn't answer, because he was too astonished by everything that was happening around him, and especially what he could see of the floor below. At first, he thought he was looking down at a carpet of many different colours, but as he sank further, he realised the carpet was really millions of things. Scared, he scanned the floor for the loser. But having no idea what the loser looked like, he couldn't tell whether he was there or not. The lower Jack sank, the louder the noise. The things on the floor were chattering and clattering and clinking and rustling until the sound was almost deafening. As their surroundings became lighter still, Jack realised that he was inside a gigantic building like a warehouse with immensely high brick walls and many holes peppering the wooden ceiling. The things that had reached the ground, the rubber balls and diaries, the paper clips and tape measures, the cameras, pens and the purses, were all jabbering away in their groups. Jack was so fascinated by everything he was seeing that his landing took him by surprise. His bare feet touched the warm wooden floor and the Christmas pig landed beside him, in a pathway between a mass of jangling keys and an army of rustling umbrellas.
"We'll need a ticket,"
said the Christmas pig briskly.
"Come on."
The Christmas pig led Jack off along the path between the keys on one side and the umbrellas on the other. They passed a knife, a skewer, and a long knitting needle. Jack could tell they were all important, because they each wore a peaked black hat with an L on it, which somehow stayed balanced on the tops of them, even while they were hopping along. The things in the hats were patrolling the edges of the path, making sure the others remained in their groups and keeping the walkway free for things that had only just arrived.
"Those are the loss adjusters,"
the Christmas pig muttered to Jack.
"I've heard about them from things that have been here before. They're the loser's servants. They enforce his laws in exchange for not being eaten."
A pair of long diamond earrings now landed in front of Jack and the Christmas pig. They were sparkling so brightly, Jack had to squint to look at them.
"Who's in charge here?"
cried one of the earrings in a grand voice.
"We're very valuable,"
shouted her twin.
"We require assistance."
"Calm down, ladies,"
said a croaking tennis ball, bouncing up alongside Jack and the Christmas pig. The ball looked as though it had been chewed by a dog and was very smelly.
"I've been through this a load of times before, I have. It looks a mess, but they're organised."
The earring seemed offended at being addressed by an object so filthy.
"I think we're in the wrong place,"
cried the first earring, glittering as she turned on the spot, looking for assistance.
Where do the precious things go?"
cried her sister. But nobody answered. To their right, the keys kept yelling up at the distant holes in the ceiling, saying things like,
"I'm in your other coat, you idiot,"
or,
"You've left me in the lock again."
The umbrellas seemed quieter and sadder. Jack heard an old black one say,
"I expect it's all over this time. He's left me on the train. He'll probably buy a new one."
A tin opener in a black hat now approached, walking on metal legs. She had a small box around her neck and thin metal arms just below her handle.
"Tickets!"
shouted the tin opener.
"New arrivals, get your tickets here!"
"Let me do the talking,"
the Christmas pig told Jack. But before he could ask for a ticket, the diamond earrings pushed in front of him.
"We're in the wrong place,"
said the first earring.
"Where do important things go?"
asked the second.
"Jewelry's over there by the west wall,"
said the tin opener, pointing.
"But you need tickets first. Here."
She tore off two blue tickets from the little box hanging round her neck and gave one each to the earrings.
"West wall,"
she repeated, because the earrings hadn't moved.
"I don't think you understand,"
said the first earring.
"We're made of real diamonds."
"You can't put us in with a bunch of common plastic beads,"
said the second earring.
"Surely there's a place for valuables."
"Get along to your waiting area,"
snapped the tin opener.
"Diamonds or plastic, it's all the same down here. We'll soon know how much you're worth up there."
Clearly offended, the earrings wiggled off towards the west wall. The loss adjuster gave the tennis ball a blue ticket too.
Dog toys are over there, between trainers and school books.
It bounced away. The tin opener then turned to Jack and the Christmas pig.
Have you just arrived too?
Yes, we were lost together,
said the Christmas pig.
We fell out of our owner's pocket.
Ugh, kids,
snorted the tin opener, tearing off two more blue tickets and handing them to Jack and the Christmas pig.
They're responsible for half the things down here. Careless little brutes. When it's quiet, we can hear them crying from up there. Ought to keep a tighter hold on Teddy if they don't want the loser getting him, shouldn't they?
I suppose so,
said the Christmas pig.
Nice workmanship,
added the tin opener, looking at Jack.
Good detailing.
Thank you,
said Jack nervously.
Children's toys are right over by the north wall,
she added.
You'll need a lift. It's too far to walk.
She gave a screeching whistle and an old roller skate came zooming along the path towards them. It was the size of a golf cart compared to Jack and the Christmas pig. They clambered inside, both just tall enough to see over the top. The roller skate trundled off towards the place where the toys were waiting, and Jack felt a lurch of excitement. Any moment now, he'd be seeing DP again. Chapter 16. Mislaid. They sped past lost playing cards, babies' shoes, lip balms and pencil cases, and all the while, thousands upon thousands more lost things floated down through golden shafts of light from the holes above. As they neared the middle of the warehouse, Jack saw an enormous clock with four faces positioned on a tall pillar so that everything could see it from wherever they were standing in the enormous building. At least Jack thought it was a clock, but then he realised it had only one hand and no numbers. The colours of the rainbow ran around the outside of the face, and the clock's single hand was about to move out of yellow into green.
I thought the Land of the Lost was supposed to be frightening,
Jack said to the Christmas pig. The huge warehouse was certainly noisy and confusing, but Jack wasn't scared.
We haven't got outside yet,
said the Christmas pig.
Well, we don't need to go outside,
said Jack.
You have the tin opener. DP will be beside the north wall with all the other toys.
He won't,
said the Christmas pig.
He's been lost too long. I heard all about this bit from the keys of the shop where I was bought. They'd been here a lot. This place is called Mislaid. It's where things go when they aren't properly lost yet. A human might just have put a thing down for a couple of minutes and forgotten where they left it, for example. Things are allowed to stay in Mislaid for 1 hour to give them a chance of being found before they have to move out into the loser's domain.
DP's outside, where the loser is,
Jack said, his excitement vanishing in an instant.
Yes,
said the Christmas pig.
But don't worry, as long as he's obeying the law, he should be safe.
But my matchbox car said the loser makes the laws, and he cheats.
That's true, he does,
said the Christmas pig.
But DP's a clever and sensible pig. I'm sure he won't do anything silly.
How do you know DP's clever and sensible?
Said Jack.
Because we're brothers,
said the Christmas pig.
But you've never met him.
That doesn't matter. He's my brother and I'm his. We're the same.
You aren't the same at all,
said Jack, in case the Christmas pig was about to suggest they go home and Jack keep him instead.
No,
said the Christmas pig.
I forgot. There's something about me that makes you want to pull off my head.
I told you I was sorry about that,
said Jack.
No, you didn't,
said the Christmas pig.
All right. Well, I am sorry about it,
said Jack. After that, they didn't talk for a bit. The roller skate carried them past a great field of library books, their pages swishing as they discussed how they'd been lost.
I think I can see toys,
said Jack at last. Ahead of them, crowded into a huge area the size of 5 football fields, were dolls, plastic dinosaurs, model cars, skipping ropes, yo-yos, game cards, jigsaw pieces and dominoes. Every kind of toy imaginable. Even though the Christmas pig had told him DP wouldn't be there, Jack couldn't help hoping to see DP's wonky ears and button eyes. But there was no sign of him anywhere.
What we need,
said the Christmas pig, as their roller skates slowed down,
is to find a pair of toys ready to swap tickets with us.
Why?
Asked Jack.
Because then we'll be allowed out into the land of the lost without waiting an hour.
Explained the pig.
Should be easy. Everyone here wants to stay as long as they can because the loser can't touch them in Mislaid.
The roller skate came to a halt. They climbed out and it scooted off again. Close by the place they were standing was a two-headed monster who was weeping into his hands. The monster was brown and lumpy, and a plastic princess in a pink dress and a tiara was comforting him.
I can't believe he hasn't found me,
sobbed the monster.
And now I suppose he's fast asleep, dreaming of the new toys he'll get for Christmas, and I'll be eaten by the loser!
Come on now, chin's up,
said the princess.
There's still time for him to find you.
Ask those two to swap tickets,
the Christmas pig whispered to Jack.
But don't tell them why. They'll think it very strange that we're keen to leave Mislaid. Go on, you look like another action figure, so they'll trust you.
What reason should I give for swapping?
Asked Jack nervously. The Christmas pig thought hard, wrinkling up his snout.
Tell the princess you think she's very pretty,
he suggested.
And you'd like to protect her from the loser, and you're willing to swap tickets to keep her safe a bit longer.
Jack turned red.
I'm not saying that.
I'll do it then,
said the Christmas pig impatiently. He tugged Jack's ticket out of his hand and strode towards the princess and the two-headed monster, the beans in his belly rattling as he walked.
Princess,
Jack heard the Christmas pig saying,
my friend has noticed your friend's distress. Being a gallant young action...
At that moment, a jack-in-the-box burst open unexpectedly, which caused a lot of toys nearby to scream with fright. Jack was glad of this, because it meant he couldn't hear all the embarrassing things the Christmas pig was telling the plastic princess. Soon, the Christmas pig was walking back towards him, holding two green tickets instead of blue. Over the Christmas pig's shoulder, Jack saw the two-headed monster blowing him kisses. He felt his face burning and turned away.
The princess said she didn't need protecting and was quite looking forward to an adventure,
said the Christmas pig.
But the monster made her swap with us. He wanted to kiss you, but I said you're too shy.
Good,
muttered Jack, taking his new ticket.
We should be able to get out any moment now with these tickets,
said the Christmas pig.
Aha!
He pointed his trotter at the strange clock on the pillar. Its hand was moving from yellow to green. Now Jack realized that when the timer's hand reached a new colour, everybody who had a ticket of that shade had to leave Mislaid.
Let's go,
said the Christmas pig, as a multitude of things with green tickets began to move out of their enclosures and shuffle off towards the north wall. They all looked nervous. The Christmas pig squared his shoulders.
This is where the real journey starts. Ready?
Ready,
said Jack, nodding. Chapter 17. The Three Doors. The thousands of green ticket holders formed untidy queues. There was much jostling and pushing. Many things were still staring longingly up at the finding holes in the ceiling, hoping to be caught in a shaft of golden light and transported back up to the land of the living. Loss adjusters in black hats pushed them onwards with cruel laughs.
Too late now. It's time for allocation.
What does that mean?
Jack muttered to the Christmas pig.
I'm not sure,
said the Christmas pig.
But I think it must have to do with which part of the land of the lost we're sent to.
They joined a queue behind a magnificent sapphire ring.
Would you believe it?
She was saying loudly to anybody who'd listen.
She took me off to wash her hands and left me behind on the sink.
Jack looked anxiously towards the front of the queue. At first, he couldn't see what lay there, but their line moved quickly, and soon he realised that they were heading towards a long row of desks at which more loss adjusters sat. Among them, a mousetrap, a corkscrew and a stapler. Beyond the desks were three gigantic doors. The first was made of plain wood, the kind you'd find on a barn or an outhouse. The second was made of shining steel, the sort you'd see on a safe or strongroom. The last was made of shining gold, and it was beautifully engraved with curling vines and flowers. Many of the things in the queues were pointing at this third door with longing expressions. One by one, the things who'd reached the front of the queues were called forward to sit at one of the desks. The loss adjusters asked them questions. Then, when the interview was over, the loss adjuster stamped their ticket and ordered them towards one of the doors.
"I'm worried,"
said the Christmas pig suddenly.
"What about?"
asked Jack.
"About how we're going to get you past the loss adjusters without them realising you're human,"
said the Christmas pig.
"The tin opener didn't realise,"
said Jack.
"But it wasn't her job to find out about you or decide where you're sent next,"
said the Christmas pig.
"Quick, we need to come up with a story. What factory were you made in?"
"I don't know,"
said Jack, trying but failing to think of a name that sounded like a factory's.
"Say the Dingledown Factory, Birmingham,"
said the Christmas pig.
"That was my factory, and they made action figures as well as cuddly pigs. Now, what are you called?"
"Jack."
"Action figures aren't called Jack. We'll say you're Pajama Boy, with the power of sleep and dreams."
"I don't want to be Pajama Boy,"
said Jack.
"He sounds stupid."
"Then say you're called Jack and see what happens,"
whispered the Christmas pig fiercely as they moved ever closer to the front of the queue.
"Now, how were you lost?"
"I fell out of a boy's pocket,"
said Jack, copying what the Christmas pig had said earlier to the tin opener.
"And where are you now?"
asked the Christmas pig.
"I'm here, talking to you,"
said Jack. The Christmas pig covered his face with his trotters.
"We'll be lucky if we aren't thrown straight to the loser."
He removed his trotters again and said,
"It's your alivened bit that's been sucked down here into the land of the lost. You need to tell the loss adjuster where your plastic body is, see? Up in the land of the living."
"This was your plan,"
said Jack, frightened and a bit cross, because they were now close to the front of the queue.
"Tell me what I should say, quickly."
But just then, an enormous commotion erupted behind them. Chapter 18. The Prisoner. Two loss adjusters, a hole punch and a fork, were dragging a small and muddy thing along between two queues, using the strong and spindly arms that so many things seem to grow in the land of the lost. Their prisoner was so filthy that it was almost impossible to see what he really was, although he seemed furry.
"Please!"
the prisoner squeaked.
"Please, please give me a ticket. Let me stay for an hour. Oh, please, please give me a chance. Somebody might want me. Oh, let me try."
As the loss adjusters drew level with Jack and the Christmas pig, Jack saw what the sobbing prisoner was. A tiny blue cuddly bunny who looked as though he'd lain in mud for days, if not weeks. Jack couldn't understand why the loss adjusters were being such bullies to the poor bunny. The fork was poking him to force him along faster, and every time the bunny squealed in pain, the hole punch laughed, opening and shutting so that little circles of paper flew from her like confetti. They dragged their prisoner straight past two of the loss adjuster's desks and headed towards what looked like a metal manhole cover in the floor, which Jack hadn't noticed before.
"You belong to the loser, you do,"
said the hole punch.
"Now stop making a scene in front of all these decent things. What, I've got owners up top?"
"Why are they treating him like that?"
Jack whispered to the Christmas pig, who merely shook his head, looking stricken.
"Is it because he's dirty?"
Jack asked, thinking of grubby old DP. What if DP had been treated like that when he'd arrived in Mislaid?
"Never mind the bunny,"
said the Christmas pig, suddenly looking determined.
"This is your chance, Jack. Crawl!"
"What?"
said Jack.
"Crawl past the loss adjusters, quickly, while everyone's watching the bunny. I'll meet you on the other side."
Now Jack understood. Everybody was transfixed by the prisoner and his captors, even the loss adjusters at the desks. Jack sank to his knees, crawled past the sapphire ring and through the gap between two desks towards a group of things which had already been allocated and were standing in front of the wooden door. These things were far too interested in the fate of the prisoner to notice Jack had joined them. Standing up, he turned to watch what was happening to the bunny now.
Please!
He was squealing.
Oh, please, give me a chance!
There's no chances for things like you,
growled the fork as the bunny struggled.
Nobody wants you. Nobody cares you lost. You're surplus.
The hole punch dragged aside the heavy manhole cover to reveal a dark hole. The bunny gave frightened squeaks as the fork prodded him closer and closer to the edge. At last, the little bunny slipped and fell. They heard his cry of terror growing fainter and fainter, as though he was sliding away down a chute, and then his scream was silenced by the hole punch slamming the metal lid back over the tunnel entrance. The two loss adjusters straightened their black hats and hopped away, looking pleased with themselves. Slowly, all the things who'd watched this horrible scene began to talk again. A plastic comb standing beside Jack whispered,
"Wasn't that dreadful?"
He had an odd appearance, having one eye on each side of him, and was speaking from a gap between his prongs.
"Yes,"
said Jack.
"It was horrible."
He felt as though one of them should have tried to help the bunny instead of watching him get thrown down the chute. He wished he'd done something, but then he might have been recognised as a living boy and perhaps made to leave the Land of the Lost before he could find DP.
"It's disgusting the way they treat surplus,"
said a battery, standing beside the comb, keeping her voice low in case a loss adjuster heard. The Christmas pig had now reached the front of the nearest queue. The corkscrew loss adjuster, which had just sent the sapphire ring to wait beside the golden door, had a loud voice, so Jack was able to hear everything that passed between him and the pig.
"Name?"
asked the corkscrew.
"The Christmas pig."
"Where were you made?"
"Dingledown Factory, Birmingham."
"Date and place of alivening?"
"This afternoon,"
said the Christmas pig.
"In the Pendleton toy shop."
"And they've lost you already?"
"Tut, tut,"
said the corkscrew. He examined a long list in front of him.
"Christmas, Christmas, Christmas, Christmas.
Ah, yes, here you are. Christmas pig. Oh dear, nobody seems to like you very much, do they?"
"I'm a replacement,"
said the Christmas pig.
"Ah,"
said the corkscrew with a smirk, twisting in his chair.
"Yes, replacements sometimes work out, and sometimes not. In your case, I see it's not. But you're still brand new, so if anyone finds you, they'll probably find a use for you. Charity shop, I expect. Wooden door!"
So the Christmas pig hurried to join Jack's group beside the wooden door, which now swung open. Chapter 19. Horsey Things. An icy blast of air hit them as they walked outside. To Jack's surprise, because it had been night when he'd left the Land of the Living, the sun was only just setting outside the warehouse. Snow was falling from a strange sky, which looked as though it was made of painted wood, though it was far, far higher than any ceiling in the Land of the Living. Jack could see a few distant finding holes in the wooden sky, but not nearly as many as they'd been in the ceiling of Mislaid. The land all around them was bleak and empty, a stony wasteland which stretched away into the distance, with only clumps of thistles growing there. Between the barren ground and the swirling snow, it was the most unwelcoming place Jack had ever seen. He glanced over his shoulder at the wall of Mislaid and saw, to his amazement, that the door they'd just come through had vanished. And then it struck him that there was no way back now unless he found DP. He was starting to fear that the Land of the Lost was even stranger and more complicated than he'd first thought. For instance, what would the things who'd gone through the other doors see when they got to the other side? And most importantly, which door had DP gone through? Then Jack heard the sound of hooves. He and the rest of the group, who, apart from the comb and the battery, included a little plastic ruler, a rubber in the shape of a panda, some shoelaces, and a pair of chopsticks, turned to see a number of horse-shaped things approaching. There were plastic ponies, a cuddly pink unicorn, a pottery cart horse, and, largest of the lot, a big wicker donkey carrying baskets of plastic fruit on either side of its saddle. At the head of all these different things rode another loss adjuster, a pair of kitchen scissors, wearing two black hats, one for each of his handles. He was mounted ends downwards on a wooden horse with squeaky wheels.
"Hurry up! Get on!"
snapped the scissors.
"No!"
he added sharply to Jack and the Christmas pig, who were headed towards two of the plastic ponies.
"You're the biggest. You can share the donkey."
So Jack and the Christmas pig clambered onto the donkey, which gave a groan and said,
"No, my wicker. It can snap, you know."
Most of the other things had great difficulty mounting their horses. The comb, the battery, the ruler, and the chopsticks kept sliding off, and the scissors ended up instructing the shoelaces to tie them on. Just as everybody had successfully mounted, a wailing klaxon sounded from behind the wall of Miss Lade.
"Oh dear,"
said Scissors, startled.
"That's not good."
"What does it mean?"
asked the comb, sounding panicked.
"It means,"
said Scissors,
"that something is where it shouldn't be."
Jack and the Christmas pig exchanged worried looks. Jack was sure the Christmas pig was thinking the same as him. Somehow, the loss adjusters knew Jack was there, even though he'd avoided questioning.
"Will the loser come?"
whispered the ruler, who was trembling.
"Maybe,"
said the scissors.
"If a thing's disobeyed the rules, the loser'll want to catch 'em and eat 'em. You disobey the rules, you become surplus. And surplus gets eaten. Always has, always will. That's the law."
Scissors cast a sharp look over the group of things on their horses.
"You've all been allocated right and proper, haven't you?"
he asked. They all nodded and said,
"Yes."
"Yes." "Yes."
Scissors kicked his wooden horse on. Its squeaky wheels began to turn, and all of them set off along a snowy trail that led around the outskirts of the wasteland.
"Well, if you're lying, we'll find out soon enough,"
said Scissors, in a grim voice. Chapter 20. The Wicker Donkey.
"Why is it still daytime?"
Jack whispered to the Christmas pig as they set off, the wicker donkey creaking as it walked.
"It was dark when we left my bedroom."
"Time's different in the Land of the Lost,"
the Christmas pig whispered back.
"They say an hour in the Land of the Living is a whole day in the Land of the Lost."
The snow fell thickly, and soon the shoulders of Jack's pyjamas were cold and wet, although that didn't worry him nearly as much as the possibility that the loser was about to loom out of the darkness. However, nothing happened, except that the battery slipped a little on her plastic pony, and the shoelaces binding her on had to tighten themselves. Even though the sky had that oddly painted appearance, it slowly darkened as they rode around the edge of the wasteland. Soon, night had fallen. Jack only knew that Scissors was still leading them because he could hear the squeak of his horse's wheels. Jack whispered to the Christmas pig,
"Where do you think they're taking us?"
"I don't know,"
said the Christmas pig.
"But we'll obey orders for now. All the things I've ever known have told me that breaking the loser's laws is the quickest way to get eaten. He lives out there,"
the Christmas pig added, pointing one of his trotters at the wide, stony wasteland.
"That's the wastes of the unlamented."
"What does unlamented mean?"
asked Jack.
"It means no human cares you've gone,"
said the Christmas pig, staring out over the bleak landscape.
"It's where surplus goes. Things that are unloved and unwanted and useless. They don't get any shelter. They just roam around on the wastes until the loser catches them."
"Our DP definitely can't be on the wastes,"
said Jack.
"He's more loved and wanted than anything down here, I expect."
"No, he can't be out there,"
agreed the Christmas pig, looking away from the wastes at the dirt track ahead.
If we're lucky, he'll be wherever we're going. It must be a place for cheap things by the looks of this group.
DP isn't cheap,
said Jack at once.
He's very valuable.
He's valuable to you. But we pigs aren't expensive,
said the Christmas pig.
I only hope nobody thinks it's strange when his identical twin turns up.
Oh, don't worry about that,
said Jack.
You don't look anything like DP. He's a different colour, his eyes are fallen out, and he's got buttons instead. His ears are wonky and he smells better.
Their wicker donkey creaked and swayed. The battery whimpered as she slid sideways off her pony yet again, and the shoelaces gripped her even more tightly.
What do you mean he smells better?
Asked the Christmas pig.
I don't know. He smells like DP, that's all.
And how do I smell?
Asked the Christmas pig.
Of toy shop and carpet,
said Jack.
It's a nothing smell.
Thanks very much,
said the Christmas pig. After that, there was silence, except for the clip-clop of pottery and plastic hooves, the creaking of the wicker donkey, and the squeaking of the wheels on Scissor's horse. At last, Scissor's shouted,
Welcome home!
Out of the darkness loomed a battered wooden sign on which was written in flaky paint, Welcome to Disposable. Part 3. Disposable. Chapter 21. Disposable.
Oh no, the shame of it,
cried Comb.
We're disposable.
Not complaining, are you?
Said Scissors in a menacing voice.
Because at least you're getting a roof over your head. There's plenty that don't. If you'd rather be surplus, it could be arranged.
No,
whispered Comb, terrified.
I wouldn't rather be surplus.
Stop your whining then,
snapped Scissors. The town they'd just entered was comprised of low wooden buildings, all of which looked drafty and flimsy. A few feeble lanterns lit the snowy street. Scissors led the group to a hitching post where he dismounted, tied up all their mounts, and set the battery, the comb, the ruler, and the chopsticks free.
Howdy!
Said a cheery voice behind them, and everybody turned around to see a pair of spectacles bouncing out of a building with swing doors that was labelled Saloon. Spectacles was wearing a black Stetson with an L on it and looked far friendlier than any loss adjuster they'd met so far.
Good to see you, friends,
he cried, beaming, his nose pads flapping like a big moustache.
I'm Sheriff Specs. Say, Scissors, we heard a rumour that the klaxon went off in Miss Lane an hour ago. Is it true?
It's true, all right,
said Scissors.
Some things where it shouldn't be.
Bless my hinges. That'll mean trouble,
said Specs anxiously. He pulled a ragged duster out of thin air, wiped his lenses, then made it magically disappear again while peering more closely at the group.
All righty. I'll take these folks inside and give them the introduction. Have a shot of lubricant before you head off, Scissors?
No time,
said Scissors.
Oh, but you might freeze up riding back in these conditions.
You've got a point,
said Scissors, now looking towards the saloon.
And you've got two,
said the sheriff, roaring heartily at his own joke.
Get it? Get it?
He looked hopefully around at the group. Nobody laughed. Combs sniffed.
Follow me then, folks,
said Specs, and he led the way into the saloon. Scissors followed right behind Jack. It made the back of Jack's neck prickle to hear his sharp points hitting the ground. The bar was lit by a single flickering oil lamp. Moth-eaten velvet curtains hung at the windows, and the wooden floorboards were stained. An old gardening glove was playing a mournful tune on a toy piano in the corner. In the ceiling was another finding hole, and right below it, taking up two seats, was an old tin lunchbox.
That there's Fingers at the piano,
said Specs, and Fingers the glove waved her thumb, and went back to playing her sad tune.
And that there's Lunchy, sitting neath the finding hole.
The lunchbox didn't say anything, but kept staring up at the dark hole in the ceiling, as though she could will a beam of golden light to appear and take her back to the land of the living. Jack couldn't blame her for wanting to leave this gloomy room. He looked around to see whether DP was sitting in one of the shadowy corners, but he wasn't there. Perhaps, Jack thought, he was asleep in one of the ramshackle houses they'd passed outside. He was wondering how soon he'd be able to sneak out to look when Specs said,
"Alrighty then, why don't we all draw up a chair and get cozy?"
They all sat down. The draft coming through the swing doors was icy cold, and Jack was now doing his best not to shiver. He wished he'd done what the Christmas pig had suggested back in his bedroom and brought a hoodie and some shoes, although he wasn't going to tell the pig that.
"So, welcome to Disposable,"
said the sheriff.
"We ain't got much in this town, but what we've got, we share. Now, I understand..."
He glanced at the sniffing comb.
"Some of you ain't too happy to be here."
"How could anything be happy to find themselves in Disposable?"
said Comb, breaking into sobs.
"It means our owners don't care about us."
The chopsticks drooped a little at that. Things in the Land of the Lost seemed to become extra bendy, quite apart from having mouths and eyes and arms. And the rubber panda sighed.
"Now that's not true, sir,"
said Specs firmly.
"If nobody cared about you, you'd have been shoved down the waste chute and mislaid."
I thought I was special to him,"
sobbed Comb, ignoring Specs and pulling a single black hair out from between his teeth.
"We've been together for years. I thought he cared."
"Come on now, friend. Buck up,"
said the sheriff gently.
"We cheap old things know how it is. Nobody's heart broke when we disappeared. We're easy to replace, but that doesn't make us worthless. No siree,"
continued Specs.
"There's still hope. Lots of it. Why, any of you might be found at any moment."
"I've never even been used,"
said Battery, looking glum.
"You'd think I'd be worth more to the family than this. It's Christmas after all. I thought I'd have a job for life inside the little girl's new remote control car."
"Well, now you know, Battery,"
wailed Comb.
"You're worthless to them. We're all worthless."
"What you need is a good night's sleep, sir,"
said the sheriff, getting back onto his arms and inviting Comb to stand up too.
"Everything will seem better after you've rested. You hurry along to room number 16 now. Up the stairs, first on the right. Off you go. Here's a good fella."
Comb looked as though he'd like to argue, but at that moment, a horrible scream echoed down the street outside. Fingers the gardening glove stopped playing the piano. Specs, Scissors, and even Lunchy turned sharply in the direction of the wastes.
"What was that?"
squealed Comb.
"What happens on the wastes is best ignored,"
said Scissors, who was now drinking his glass of lubricant beside the bar.
"Just do as you're told. And if you're lucky, you'll never find out what causes the screams."
Chapter 22. Adjustments. Once Comb had disappeared upstairs, Speck said,
"Why don't Fingers play us some Christmas carols? Brighten things up."
The gardening glove began to play "O Little Town of Bethlehem," but it didn't really help. Jack could tell all the things were still thinking, as he was, of the scream.
"Now,"
Speck said to the remaining newcomers,
"the rules here are simple. Just stay within the town limits and keep cheerful. Never forget. At any minute, you might be found. Or adjusted."
"Adjusted?"
repeated the Battery.
"What does that mean?"
"It means your value up there has changed,"
said the sheriff.
"Take your case, Battery. Nobody thinks they need you right now. But let's say they pull off the back of the little girl's remote-controlled car on Christmas Day and realize they haven't got enough batteries without you. That's when you become much more important to them. They'll start looking for you harder. And while they're looking, you'll be moved to Bother It's Gone. That's the next town, because you've become that much more important to your owners. In Bother It's Gone, you get your own little house, maybe even with a garden. But if you end up staying in Disposable Forever, folks, then I hope you'll help me make this the happiest, most vibrant town in the Land of the Lost.
Jack now felt certain DP must be in Bother It's Gone. They needed to get out of Disposable as quickly as possible and head there instead.
All righty, let's get you all bedded down for the night,
said Specs.
I'm afraid some of you will need to share a room because we're a little cramped in Disposable.
Nobody's as cramped as me.
Said a wheezy, echoing voice. Everyone looked around to see who'd spoken, but there wasn't anyone else in the bar.
That you, Haley?
Said Specs, grinning in the direction of the lunchbox, who looked very embarrassed.
Yes,
said the wheezy voice, which Jack now realised was coming from inside the tin box.
Can't I come out for a bit? Please? It's so dark in here. And it smells of egg sandwich.
No,
snapped Scissors from the bar.
You stay put. Things that are lost inside things that are lost must stay lost in the things that were lost. That's the law.
Jack looked at the Christmas pig, but he didn't seem to have understood this any more than Jack had.
But it's horrible in here,
wailed the voice.
It won't be forever,
the lunchbox told her tummy.
Ha!
Said Scissors with a cruel smile.
Don't kid yourself. There's probably a nice new lunchbox waiting under the Christmas tree for your owner right now. Pink with unicorns on the lid, I expect. You think she'll bother looking for an old tin like you once she's got something nice and new and plastic?
With a sob, Lunchbox jumped off the two chairs and clattered away up the stairs towards the bedrooms, while the wheezy voice inside her said,
Ouch! Ouch! You're shaking me around.
That weren't kind, Scissors,
said Specs in a low voice.
Kind?
Spat Scissors.
It's the truth. Things need to know their place. That's how we all stay out of trouble.
He poured the last drops of lubricant over the screw holding him together, then stalked out of the bar on his sharp points into the swirling snow. Specs sighed, then told each new thing which number room they were to sleep in. One by one, the things headed up the stairs until only Jack and the Christmas pig were left. Now Specs seemed to notice them for the first time.
We don't usually get things as new as you in Disposable,
he said, looking curiously at the Christmas pig.
What's your story, pig?
Oh, we were lost together,
said the Christmas pig.
We both fell out of our boy's pocket.
What kind of boy wouldn't look for two fine toys like yourselves?
Asked the sheriff, peering from the Christmas pig to Jack.
What are you anyway?
He asked, staring into Jack's face.
I'm an action figure,
said Jack.
Pajama boy, with the power of sleep and dreams. I've got my own cartoon,
he added, to make himself more important.
Your own cartoon, you say?
Said Specs, still gazing at Jack.
Well, well, remarkable detailing. So you both fell out of your owner's pocket?
Our owner's a very spoilt boy,
said the Christmas pig.
He doesn't care about his toys because he's got so many. As far as he's concerned, one stuffed pig is very much like another stuffed pig, one action figure much like the next. He's even been known to throw his things around and stamp on them.
The Christmas pig added, with half a glance at Jack, who scowled.
Deary me, I've heard there are such children.
said Specs sadly.
Back in my day, children had fewer toys and treasured them. We'd never have seen such fine specimens as yourselves here in olden times. Let me walk you up to your room,
Specs went on.
You won't mind sharing, since you know each other already.
He led them upstairs, and then along a dark, windowless upstairs corridor, with numbered doors on either side. As they passed number 23, the door opened a crack, and the tin lunchbox peered out.
Am I being adjusted?
She whispered.
Don't look like it, Lunchy,
said Specs.
We normally hear about adjustments earlier in the day than this.
The lunchbox sighed and closed her door again.
Poor thing,
said Specs quietly as they walked on down the corridor.
Finding it hard to settle in.
Chef Specs,
said Jack suddenly. He had to make absolutely sure that DP wasn't here, so he ignored the warning look the Christmas pig was giving him.
Have you seen another toy pig here in Disposable? He's around the same height as this pig, but he's got buttons for eyes and his ears are lopsided.
A pig with button eyes and lopsided ears,
said Specs, pausing in the darkness to peer at Jack again.
No, son, I can't say I've seen any pig matching that description.
Jack was disappointed, but not really surprised. Specs pushed open the creaking door of bedroom 20.
Sleep well, fellas,
he said. But he gave Jack a very suspicious look as he closed the door behind him. Chapter 23. The Plan. The moment Specs had gone, the Christmas pig rounded on Jack.
What did you ask him about DP for?
Because that's why we're here, to find him,
said Jack.
Isn't it obvious he can't be Indisposable? Why would you draw attention to us like that? And what was all that about having your own cartoon?
The Christmas pig added angrily.
Well, Pajama Boy's a stupid name,
said Jack just as crossly.
And there has to be a reason a factory made an action figure. Why would anyone make a plastic boy in pyjamas?
I only hope Specs doesn't tip off the loser that there's an action figure around here who's acting a lot like a living boy who's lost a cuddly pig,
said the Christmas pig.
If the loss adjusters start asking other toys whether they've ever heard of Pajama Boy in his cartoon, we're really going to be in trouble. We mustn't do anything else to draw suspicion to ourselves while we're thinking up a plan.
As Jack couldn't think of a good retort to this, he sat down on the double bed, which made the mattress springs creak, and looked around. The room was lit by a single candle, and the wallpaper was peeling. Cobwebs stretched across the finding hole in the ceiling. Clearly nobody had been found in this room for a very long time. Meanwhile, the Christmas pig had moved to the cracked window and was staring down into the snowy street. Jack was far too worried about DP to sleep, so after a while, he got up and joined the Christmas pig at the window. Snow was still falling thickly into the dark street outside. Scissors and the horses were gone.
Christmas pig,
said Jack after a long stretch of silence.
Hmm,
said the Christmas pig.
What does alivening mean? Is it like the waking up you told me about?
That's it,
said the Christmas pig, still looking down into the dark, snowy street.
And it happens when human feelings rub off on things.
It's not really rubbing off,
said the Christmas pig.
The feelings come inside us. Alivening is what changes us from fabric and beans and fluff, or metal and wood and plastic into something more. It can take a thing years to be fully alivened, but sometimes it comes all at once. That's the way it happened to me today in the toy shop. Holly and your grandpa were discussing which pig to take home to you, and when they chose me, I was alivened. That's when I began to mean something. The alivening is when we truly understand what we were made to do.
Is that why you want to belong to Holly?
Asked Jack.
Because she chose you.
Yes,
said the Christmas pig after a little hesitation.
That's what...
But just then, noises in the street below made them both peer back out of the window.
Someone's coming,
said Jack, scared. He could see more black hats at the end of the street. Were they coming to find the thing that shouldn't be here? 3 new loss adjusters, a razor, a chisel, and a penknife, were coming down the street, each of them driving a funny-looking sledge or carriage. An old slipper, pulled by a clockwork mouse, a shoebox dragged by a fuzzy toy dog, and a wooden cart with wheels, which was being pulled along by 2 elephant ornaments, one made of marble and one of brass. 3 passengers, a bus pass, a key, and a passport, sat in each of the vehicles behind the loss adjuster who was driving. As Jack and the Christmas pig watched, the carriages stopped beneath the lantern outside the saloon, and Sheriff Specs came bustling out onto the street to greet them. Slowly and carefully, the Christmas pig opened the window. It gave a little squeak, but fortunately, the new arrivals were making too much noise down below to hear it. And now Jack and the Christmas pig were able to hear what Specs and the loss adjusters were saying.
Howdy, friends!
cried Specs.
I was expecting you an hour ago.
We get held up. There's a new checkpoint,
said the penknife, who wore a furry black hat.
Haven't you heard? Seems there's a thing down here that shouldn't be in the land of the lost at all.
Shiver my screws! You don't say!
Gasped Specs.
When's the last time that happened?
I can't recall it ever happening,
said Penknife.
You seen anything acting oddly, Specs?
Well now,
said Specs slowly.
Funny you should say that. I was just talking to a pair of toys who I thought was acting a mite oddly.
Jack and the Christmas pig exchanged frightened glances.
Then you'd better contact Captures at once,
said Penknife sternly.
The loser will eat you as well as them if it turns out they're the things that shouldn't be here. Anyway, here they are. 3 new citizens for disposable from bother it's gone. Oi, you 3!
He shouted rudely at the passengers sitting in the vehicles.
Out!
Now,
said Specs, as the bus pass, key and passport all climbed down into the street, where they stood, huddled together, looking miserable.
There's no need to treat them rough just because they've been adjusted.
I'm in a hurry,
snapped Penknife.
It's the usual story for these 3. They've all been replaced up there, so the trouble they caused is over. But I've got an order to adjust 3 of yours. Here.
He handed Specs his list.
Okay,
Specs read out loud.
I had a hunch she wouldn't be with us long. Fingers! Oh, dear,
said Specs sadly.
We'll miss her at the piano. And bless my nose pads. Lunchy, too?
The mum's realised her little girl's lost inhaler is inside her,
said Penknife.
The girl's got asthma. The mum's keen to find that lunchbox now.
Jack suddenly gripped the Christmas pig's soft arm.
What?
Whispered the pig.
We could hide inside lunchbox and go to the next town.
What if they make lunchbox open at the checkpoint?
Said the Christmas pig.
I don't know,
Jack admitted, frightened at the prospect.
But what if Specs reports us to Captures?
The Christmas pig thought for a few seconds, his snout crinkled up, then said,
All right, but leave the talking to me and don't mention having a cartoon. Take the blanket off that bed,
he added.
It's cold out there. I told you, you should have put on something warmer.
I'm fine,
snapped Jack. But when the Christmas pig had turned his back, Jack sneaked the blanket off the bed and followed. Chapter 24. Lunchbox. Jack and the Christmas pig crept out of their room and back along the dark corridor, the pig holding his belly tight to muffle the sound of his beans, until they reached door number 23. Jack knocked softly, and the old tin lunchbox opened it.
Do you mind if we come in?
Asked the Christmas pig.
Not at all,
Lunchbox said politely, though she sounded surprised. Lunchbox's room was quite as dark and shabby as the one they'd left, and even smaller. It looked over the back of the saloon, across the many low wooden houses of disposable. Snow was still falling heavily past the window.
Good news,
the Christmas pig told Lunchbox.
The adjusters have just arrived. If you can prove you've got an inhaler inside you, they're going to take you out of disposable.
Well, of course I can prove it,
cried Lunchbox joyfully, and she let her lid fall open. Sure enough, inside sat a glum-looking inhaler who said in a wheezy voice,
If I'm the reason we're being adjusted, why can't I?
But she didn't finish her question, because the Christmas pig had just jumped into the lunchbox beside her and covered her mouth with his trotters. Jack squeezed inside too. It was very cramped and he could smell the egg sandwiches.
That's extremely rude,
said Lunchbox's shocked voice from above them.
You can't just walk in without an invitation.
Shut your lid,
said the Christmas pig fiercely.
Or we'll tell them you offered to smuggle us to the next town and you'll be chucked out onto the wastes for helping Surplus.
Get out! Get out!
Cried the Lunchbox, jumping up and down as she tried to dislodge them. But Jack and the Christmas pig clung on.
I'll tell them you jumped in and tried to make me smuggle you.
It'll be our word against yours,
said the Christmas pig.
And what's more, if you don't help us, my action figure friend here will break this inhaler, and if the inhaler's broken, you'll never be adjusted. Pajama boy's got remarkably fine fingers, you know. Perfect for breaking things.
Even though the whole idea of getting inside the lunchbox had been Jack's, he now felt both frightened and guilty. He couldn't help feeling sorry for the lunchbox, and he definitely didn't want to break the inhaler. He was also shocked at how mean the Christmas pig was being to these poor things. But before he could say any of this, there was a knock on the door.
Lunchy?
Came old Specs's voice from outside in the corridor. At once, Lunchbox slammed her lid shut, leaving Jack and the pig squashed together in the dark with the inhaler.
Yes?
They heard Lunchbox say in a quavering voice.
Good news! You're being adjusted!
Oh!
Came Lunchbox's muffled voice.
Wonderful.
You all right, dearie? You don't sound that pleased.
No, I am. I'll just miss you, Specs.
Oh, well now,
said the sheriff, sounding touched.
Ain't that sweet? But you better hurry. The adjustment team's running late.
The lunchbox's lid was a little bit warped, which was lucky as it let in enough air for Jack to breathe. Not to mention a tiny ray of light. Squashed together inside the dark tin, Jack and the Christmas pig felt the lunchbox hopping downstairs into the bar. Lunchy's tin bottom made such a racket crossing the wooden floor that Jack felt safe to whisper to the Christmas pig, who still had his trotters clamped over the inhaler's mouth.
There was no need to threaten her like that.
Do you want to find DP or not?
Of course I do,
said Jack.
But you're horrible.
Says the boy who tried to pull off my head,
said the Christmas pig.
Stop going on about that. I've said I'm sorry.
The lunchbox kept bouncing along, and Jack knew they'd reached the street when they heard the penknife's voice quite close by.
You there, lunchbox. You ride in my wagon as your biggest. Here, chisel, help it up.
No, I can manage,
said lunchbox, sounding scared. Jack guessed she didn't want any of the loss adjusters to feel how heavy she was when she was only supposed to have an inhaler inside her. She made several little jumps, then finally managed to land with a clunk inside the wooden wagon.
Sorry I'm late.
Came a new voice.
I'm so pleased to be going. Not that you haven't been kind, Specs, very kind, but I will miss sharing a room with Hanky. He hasn't washed since he got here.
Poor fella,
said the sheriff sadly.
He's given up. Some things do when they haven't been found for years. Well, good luck, Pokey. Goodbye, Fingers. Goodbye, Lunchy. We'll miss you.
So long, Specs,
called Penknife.
Mind you contact captures about those toys now.
The wooden wagon moved off. Jack could hear the footsteps of the two heavy elephants crunching in the snow, the buzz of the clockwork mouse and the occasional yap of the fuzzy dog.
I'm going to let go of you now,
the Christmas pig whispered to the inhaler.
But if you scream or give us away, we'll make sure you get thrown onto the wastes with us.
The inhaler gave a little puff, which seemed to be her way of agreeing, and the Christmas pig let her go. She drew a long, wheezy breath, then whispered,
You're both very rude and nasty, but it's also nice to see something apart from inside of this tin. So, hello and welcome.
The three carriages moved on for what felt like at least an hour, and Jack was getting quite tired of the smell of egg sandwiches when they heard a voice from up ahead.
Halt!
The wooden wagon trundled to a stop. Jack and the Christmas pig looked at each other, and Jack could tell from the expression in the pig's little black plastic eyes that he, too, was scared.
Documents!
Said a rasping voice. They heard the shuffling of papers.
One Pokemon card, Pokey! Owners realised could be valuable. Check,
said the cruel voice.
One gardening glove, fingers. Owner can't find new ones as comfortable. Check. One lunchbox, lunchy. Owners remembered there's an inhaler inside her.
Something banged hard on the side of Lunchbox, who let out a yelp of pain.
You in there, inhaler?
Snarled the voice.
Yes,
called the inhaler.
Check,
said the cruel voice.
All right, you can proceed. Keep your eyes peeled, though, Penknife. We're on high alert. I suppose you've heard there's some thing down here that shouldn't be.
Yes. Any description yet?
Asked Penknife.
Not yet,
said the cruel voice.
But I've never seen the loser so angry.
You've seen him?
Said Penknife nervously.
Oh, yes,
said the cruel voice.
He told me the night for miracles and lost causes won't last forever. Once it's over, finders keepers.
What does that mean?
Asked Penknife.
No idea,
snarled the cruel voice.
Just keep watch for anything acting strangely.
With that, the wooden cart rolled on again.
He dented me,
Lunchy complained to Penknife.
Well, that's how I'm afraid,
said Penknife.
Never looks for anything bash.
He raised his voice to address all three passengers.
You lot may as well get comfy and sleep if you can. We've got a long way to go.
The cart now started to move uphill. Jack, who found himself forced to the back of the lunchbox, managed to curl up in a corner, wrapped in the blanket he'd brought from Disposable, with his face lying against the Christmas pig's soft head. It wasn't at all like curling up with DP, but it was comfier than leaning against the cold tin wall.